Hey everybody, what is going on? Hope everyone is well. We took a break last week, but we are back. Welcome back once again to a brand new episode of your favorite podcast, Sweeten Up Podcast, season number 2, episode number 63. I am your host, Jeff Spencer. Thank you so much for taking some time to join me today. I greatly appreciate it, whether you have for an entire season or you are today for the first time. Thank you so much for joining us. However, if you are just joining us for the first time, take a look back at our library of 62 episodes anytime you want, anywhere you subscribe to the show. As always, if you like what you hear on the podcast today, please be sure to subscribe anywhere you get your podcasts so that you never miss a future episode. You can find the podcast on Instagram and Facebook at Sweeten Up Podcast. With that being said, my guest on the podcast today is considered one of the number one chefs in the state of Connecticut, the great and powerful Emily Mingrone. Emily Mingrone is a seasoned chef and co-owner of Tavern on State, a beautiful restaurant located on State Street in New Haven, Connecticut. A culinary school graduate, Emily has worked at some of the best restaurants in Connecticut, such as Zinc in New Haven, Match in South Norwalk, and Jessup Hall in Westport, working under goats such as Chef Matt Storch, a friend of the show, Chef Bill Taby, and Chef Denise Appel. You can also find Emily on the Food Network, where she has competed on both Chopped and Guy's Grocery Games, of which she won. We had a fantastic conversation getting to know Emily's early years growing up, working alongside her chef father, culinary school, working for culinary legends, her appearances on the Food Network, navigating the pandemic, everything going on with Tavern on State, what she enjoys doing in her free time, and so much more. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, here she is, my friend, a wonderful human, and an incredible chef, Emily Mingrone. Joining me on the podcast today via Zoom video conferencing, what an honor and pleasure it is to have this lovely individual on the other side of my computer screen, the co-owner and chef of Tavern on State in New Haven, Connecticut, and Food Network Chop Champion. You also seen her on Guy's Grocery Games, the great and oh so powerful Emily Mingrone. And Emily, thank you so much for joining me, and how are you this evening?
I'm good, and thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
No, thank you. I mean, like I was saying before we got going, so many people recommended you come on the show, and it's very obvious why, because you're definitely one of, if not the number one chef in the state. We love you. You're great. You do awesome work. So thank you so much for giving me some time and a really hectic time. And on that note, one place I like to start with my guests is just sort of get their perspective on how the pandemic was for them. So how did you get by? How are your family, your friends, everything like that? Is everyone good? And what could you tell us?
Well, first and foremost, everyone's happy and healthy. So that's really the bottom line and the most I can ask for. But it was a freaking crazy year. You know, now, unfortunately or fortunately, it's become normal. So it's a little bit easier to kind of know what to expect. But last year, when everything started hitting the fan and we got shut down, it was very, very scary. Because as you know, or the listeners may not know, but we're only 2 years old. So we opened in June 2019. And then in March, we were shut down. So that's pretty crazy to deal with your first year of business, and very, very nerve-wracking, because we didn't really have a chance to build our full fan base. You know, we had locals that knew who we were, but I was worried that that interruption was going to be crucial in a negative way for us. But it was actually the other hand. The community supported us throughout. We did take out. And I mean, my second business was born out of the pandemic innovation. So it's, I mean, I can't complain. It's crazy and insane, but we made it. So
awesome. That's good to hear. And it's also good to hear that some, you know, positive things came of such a awful situation. So that's also good to hear. And I always like to get my guest perspective. So that is great. Let's dive right into it. You know, I understand that your intro into the culinary world sort of began early on in your life because your father was a chef. So definitely bring me back to your early days and how you really thought that, you know, this is what you wanted to do. You know, the culinary world, you know, that was for you.
For sure. Well, it's funny when you introduced or mentioned my dad, you said was and then is. he corrected me on that. When I was on Guy's Grocery Games, I said something like my father was a chef and blah, blah, blah. And I saw him shortly thereafter. And he's like, what the hell are you talking about? I am a chef. I'm like, okay, Dad. So I appreciate
the chef point. Always a chef.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
So yeah, he's a really talented guy. He's retired now, but when I was in, you know, when I was a kid, he was in the restaurants and he worked at the Quinnipiac Club in New Haven for 30 years, just doing his thing. And then when I was in high school, he opened a deli in Brantford. We did catering for weddings and stuff. So I worked there in my teens. And I left before I hit my 20s. I went off to college and just kind of tried to do my own thing. But that really gave me a taste for it. And, you know, he's always been my point of contact when it comes to needing advice, or when I used to have a lot more cooking questions than I do now, he was the guy I would call. Or if I was trying to think about, you know, my next career move, I would call him. And it was interesting and kind of bittersweet, because there was a point in my life, not that long ago in the scheme of things, you know, under 10 years ago, where we had a conversation about me taking over the family business. And I, in my heart, I knew that that wasn't my path, but I wanted to be of service if I could be, because, you know, I take great pride in what he's done. But he was super understanding. You know, I tried it for a bit. It wasn't for me. And we just had kind of a real talk. And I'm like, you know, I think I gotta branch out. And he was super disappointed, of course, but he was understanding, and he kind of just pushed me to keep doing what I want to do. And now he's one of our biggest supporters and fans, and he's super proud, which makes me feel really good. So
that's awesome. So food was like super, super big at home, and cooking and everything like that.
Oh, totally. And it's funny, because my dad's a huge football fan too. And when I was a little kid, I would go with them and tailgating. And there's a picture of me with this huge jumbo shrimp cocktail that my dad brought from the restaurant. So I was eating well from a young age. So that kind of, the eating part really got me hungry to, no pun intended, but hungry to learn how to cook well, because I wanted to eat well.
Yeah, and speaking of football, the season kicks off tonight, actually, ironically enough. So I'm sure your dad will be happy about that.
Exactly. Well, he's only happy until he remembers he's a Dolphins fan, and then he's like...
Well, I'm a Jets fan, so I totally get where he's coming from. Yeah. Good football is few and far between, for sure.
Yeah.
But so I know in 2009, you graduated from culinary school. What school did you go to? What made you decide to go to culinary school? I mean, I'm sure I know why, but maybe there's another reason why. And, you know, how was that?
For sure. Well, yeah. So the first note is, I did start later in life than most people. A lot of people will go right out of high school, and that's their choice of college. I bounced around a little bit until I kind of found my way. You know, I started in food early. And then I kind of had a gap. You know, I went to school for, I studied psychology for a little while. Then I studied marketing, and I was trying to go the corporate route. I had a couple corporate jobs that really just kind of sucked the life out of me. And I thought that's what I was supposed to do, you know?
Yeah.
And then once, you know, every year I got older, you kind of start getting to know yourself a little bit better. And I'm like, this is not right. So then I was looking for a job on Craigslist or something. And I saw a local restaurant was hiring, and I was like, I kind of had this feeling. I was like, that seems intriguing. It seems like where I belong. It seems like where I fit. But I was apprehensive because I hadn't cooked in a professional kitchen, like, you know, a chef's kitchen. I worked for my dad for a while, and I waited tables and I bartended. So I knew the business, but I didn't really know what it took to be a chef, just other than watching him. So I was like, I assumed I needed to go to culinary school. And so I went locally in Shelton. There's a place called Lincoln Culinary Institute, formerly Connecticut Culinary Institute. It was an 18-month program. It was a little bit frustrating, to be honest, because as I said, I was 25, and everyone that were supposed to be my peers were, you know, teenagers more or less. So I was at a different life stage. So I made the most of it. You know, you get out what you put in. So I just did my best with that. And simultaneously, I was working at Zinc in New Haven, with Chef Denise Appel, who's been a huge inspiration throughout my career.
Zinc is awesome. Zinc is a great, great spot.
She's been there for so long. And
I know, I was thinking about that today.
Crazy. She was doing farm to table before it was even like a buzzword, you know, it was just the way she cooked. So those two things together, I would take the train to school and then I would get home, walk to work. So I was like literally doing double shifts before I was actually doing double shifts, but it really kind of fortified my skill set and it kind of felt like the fast track in many ways, because I pushed myself really hard to kind of cram in all that knowledge, because I knew I was going to learn more on the job than in school. But without the diploma, I was worried I wasn't going to get in to any like quality restaurants. Now I understand how freaking hard it is to find people, so I probably didn't need to waste the money, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, no, I mean, with all that going on, and then you were basically doing every position, you were, you know, you did every position at a restaurant. So it's not like you just went right to being a chef. You had all these other things you were doing and sort of worked your way up to the very top, you know, to owning your own restaurant. It's super cool. And that was one of the cool things when I was sort of reading about your background and hearing from other people and everything like that. And so talk to me about that. Like, what was that like, just doing basically everything?
Well, I really take great pride in that. It's hard to kind of sometimes zoom out and remember where you came from. Of course, I know in my heart of hearts, but I get bogged down with the day to day from time to time. So I always knew, I mean, I don't really ever do anything half-assed. If I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. So I knew that in order to excel, especially at the restaurants I wanted to work at, I really had to push hard and learn as much as I could, because I also wanted to be confident going into these places. I wanted to impress whoever I was working for. My dad always, you know, early on, it was like, a lot of people call themselves chefs, but like, there's a difference between a cook and a chef. And he always kind of just ingrained that in me. So I was a cook for a long time, and I sought out the best chefs around to work under. You know, I worked for Denise first, and then I left there and I went to Fleischer's so I could learn how to cut meat. I thought that was really important for my my skill set just in general. And then from there, I built a relationship with Matt Storch of Match.
Friend of the podcast.
He's one of my good buddies. And so we built a relationship there because he was buying meat from us. And then we just kind of got to talking, and he's like, I need somebody. And I was like, I don't know. Because at that point, I had a few jobs in between, but I really knew I wanted to do my own thing. But I'm grateful that I put it on hold, because I think the experience from Match, and then after that, I went to work for Bill Tavey at Jessup Hall. And I think without those two experiences, I wouldn't have had as well-rounded of a idea of what it takes to run a restaurant. It just feels really good. You know, I learned so many little, like, it was like all these little puzzle pieces coming together to kind of create the chef that I am today, not even necessarily creatively, but operationally. Match is so freaking busy. It taught me a lot about running a kitchen and staying organized and all that stuff. So, I mean, and these people, I respected them. I worked hard, and then in turn they respected me and gave me the knowledge and tools to move forward, which was incredible.
Yeah, you worked on a lot of goats, a lot of Michael Jordans of the Connecticut restaurant scene.
Oh, and that was totally deliberate. I knew I didn't want to just work anywhere, because that's a waste of my time. I mean, not to sound like that, but it's a waste of my time. I never wanted to be a schlep. You know, I wanted to be who I am now, and I took the necessary steps to kind of navigate here.
Yeah, I love Chef Storch, great friend of the show. I go to Match Burger Lobster every birthday for the last, I don't know how many years, because I love lobster so much. And I just love that it's 24/7 there. I mean,
it's so good.
you can't beat that. That's great. I told him he's like a god to me. Definitely talk to me about working at the butchery and learning that art, because to me, that's very interesting. Like, I love, you know, meat products and stuff like that, and just the whole art of how they do it behind the scenes, you know, whether you're at the store or the deli, whatever it may be. So what made you decide to get into that aspect of the culinary world?
I don't know. I mean, I think it was like, again, I felt like I didn't learn as much as I wanted to learn in culinary school, because there's just not enough time. And I'm the type of person that, like, even outside of cooking, like, if I want to know something, I really kind of want to know everything about it, which is a blessing and a curse, because like I sometimes won't just jump into something until I feel I have enough information. So that's why I sought out the butchery, because that was one part of my repertoire that I thought was lacking. That, and as well as like bread baking, which I still at this point in my life would love to have a stage with, because I don't know enough. I know the basics, but anyway, so that's why I went to the butcher shop. So I hung out there for a while as an apprentice, and then they had bigger plans to expand to a butcher/cafe, which ironically is now where Match Burger is. So I kind of fell into the role as head chef of the cafe that was with Fleischer's. And that's where I really got to explore my creativity, because we were just a lunch spot. You know, it was a cafe, lunch and brunch, but I had full creative freedom to do chef's tastings. We would do them like once a month, and it would range from like 4 courses to 10 courses. And I just had access to all these beautiful things from the shop. And, you know, I had a bunch of great local purveyors, and that I didn't really have too many people like watching over me, like in a micromanaging way. They kind of let me just do what I needed to do, and the customers loved it. And that's where I started getting attention for my cooking style, which was so cool. My confidence wasn't quite there yet. I was still very experimental, but it was cool to kind of be able to test myself without anyone breathing down my neck. So that's where I learned how to cook a lot of more unique cuts and the more interesting things that you don't necessarily see at a regular restaurant or the grocery store or whatever. And a lot of that shows itself at Tavern now. And I mean, of course, I have my own butcher shop, but they.
So let's talk about that. So during the pandemic, you opened up Provisions on State.
Mm-hmm.
And so on this same note of, you know, a butcher shop and everything like that, definitely talk about Provisions on State, because I see the photos and I drool and I want to hear more about it. That way I can get that more amped up when I come by.
Oh yeah, totally. So Provisions, that goes back to, again, the quarantine time. So we shut down March 16th, and I don't remember when we were able to reopen. I think it was mid July. But in the interim, we had a pretty sick to-go menu, and I knew that, you know, things like toilet paper or, I don't know, milk, people were having a hard time getting that stuff at the grocery store, just because of availability, but also because a lot of people didn't want to go out, you know, into a large place like that. So it got me thinking. First, we just put, you know, the simple, we had a provision section on our to-go menu, which included like sliced cheese, sliced meats, milk, toilet paper, a couple other things, you know, call in for a couple of burgers. You need a roll of toilet paper, you know, I'll hook you up. It seems silly, but we always just wanted to serve the community. And that's a way that I felt that we could do it. We weren't trying to make money off it. I truly just wanted people to be able to get what they need without having to, you know, go too far.
That's awesome.
So a couple doors down from us, there's a vacant storefront that's been vacant since we came in here. And somebody recently had purchased it, redid the whole building, because it was pretty dilapidated. So we didn't have the bandwidth to really redo a whole space physically like that. So once it was refinished, we were like, I don't know. Something clicked in my head once. And I told my business partner, I was like, we should open a butcher shop. And the key part was my relationships from my past with my Fleischer's friends. Our head butcher is Zach Pierce, who I met back in the day when I was working at Fleischer's, who lives a mile away from the shop. And he was an integral part in doing this because I only have two hands. You know, I am at the restaurant most of my time, but I needed that key person to help me with provisions that I could trust, that I could use as my point of contact to kind of hit the ground running. So once he was on board, we kind of just started rolling with it. The space was beautiful. It was a shell, you know, so we had to put in all the equipment, but it was a pretty quick pop-up because it's a small space. We want to sell meat and vegetables and a couple other cool retail products. So it didn't take too much to get it off the ground. And now we're still slowly building our clientele. I mean, we're busy, but I think people are just starting to know about us. So it's pretty exciting to watch it grow because there's nothing like that around here.
Yeah, no, exactly. And exactly where are you for people that maybe don't know?
So we are on State Street in New Haven. It's a little neighborhood called East Rock. If you're coming up the highway, 95 North to 91, right off exit 5. And if you're coming south, I think it's also exit 5 or maybe 4, but either one will take you right to State Street. And our businesses are 3 doors away from one another, so you can easily check out one and the other in any order you want.
That's awesome. That's great. I can't wait to check it out because, like I said, I've seen the photos of Provisions on State, and it just looks gorgeous in there.
Thank you.
I love the aesthetics and everything like that. And of course, I love the cases of delicious meats.
We tried to keep it. And it's funny because, like, again, Fleischer's was fine, but there was something about it that was a little bit like precious and kind of like, I don't want to say uppity, but it wasn't like, I don't know, it can be intimidating for people to walk into a place like that. So we kind of tried to make it a little more casual. And that's how I feel about Tavern too. I just want people to feel comfortable to talk and ask questions about what we're serving. And Provisions kind of has like a little low-key punk vibe. You know, we got graffiti on the walls and we put stickers everywhere. And a lot of the products have, you know, I choose the products very specifically, you know, for quality first, and then the labels and stuff like that second, because there's a certain aesthetic that I really like about what we're offering there.
Yeah, Tavern on State. You know, like I said, I've seen photos from it, you know, from the inside, and it just looks incredible, like absolutely incredible, like one of the coolest designs I've seen of a restaurant. It looks so cozy in there.
Thank you. Yeah, it's super cozy.
And I know it's got an identity. Like, talk to me about the identity that you're trying to go for at Tavern on State.
So this is the cool part. We got so lucky because I had been looking at restaurant spaces for quite a while, and nothing was right, you know? And then I walked in here, and I'm from New Haven area. So I knew this place from what it was before, which was like a taco joint. But the wood paneling, the walls, the ceiling was all there. So the textures and stuff were just speaking.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Awesome. 'Cause I knew I wanted a tavern, but like most of the space, like it needs to have that cozy feeling.
Yeah.
So we got the exposed brick on one wall. Our patio is like this little alley that runs alongside the building. It's literally just perfect for the aesthetic or the concept we were going for. So aesthetically, conceptually, we just kind of wanted to have a comfortable place for people to eat really good food and have really good drinks. I mean, it's honestly simple as that. And the tavern thing is just true to that, whatever that word means, you know, a meeting place, good food, sustenance, beverages. You know, we just want people to feel good about being here, kind of lose track of time, just enjoy your company, enjoy your food. And it's all the little details. My partner and I always say it's all the little things that you don't notice that you're noticing, you know, like the music is really good. It's at the perfect volume. You know, the servers are attentive, but not intrusive. It's like just across the board, we keep everything very simple and straightforward, but we don't try not to miss any detail.
Awesome. And definitely, you know, and your business partner, it's Shane McGowan, right?
Yep.
Yeah, definitely talk to me about Shane because he's awesome. I hear so much about him, how and just everything that you guys have done together has been amazing. So, you know, for those who don't know Shane, give us a little insight.
Shane's awesome. So it's funny, we met at Jessup Hall, which I mentioned before, and we were both working under Bill, and he was the beverage guy and I was the chef. And we both weren't there for a huge amount of time, but we really bonded over kind of our philosophies on our respective crafts. So, you know, when I'm cooking food and stuff, it's all about seasonality, balance, simple, but delicious. There's this chef I follow, Jeremy Fox from California, but his posts always say simple ain't easy. And that's kind of in a nutshell, the way we both feel. So his cocktails are so innovative, but they're so simple and straightforward and just perfectly balanced. And that's the thing that people underestimate with good food and drink is like, you really don't have to go too crazy and overdo it with any ingredients. It's just about making sure everything is in the right ratios. And just, we try not to overthink it, but both of us have enough experience under our belt now that we can just use our instincts to kind of create, which is really kind of cool. And we view things very similarly.
That's awesome. You know, I'm a nerd and I love Star Wars. And the way I look at Bill Tabey, Chef Bill Tabey, is sort of, and he's got great places, you know, Jessup Hall, Kawani, The Welk is my favorite. It's one of my favorites.
I was just there last week. It was so freaking good.
And the way I look at him is sort of like Yoda in Star Wars. Everyone comes in and he teaches and they learn, and you know, and he's the master. And then when they're all, you know, when they learned everything, they take off and they open their own like equally dope like spots.
Exactly.
And so I kind of look at him that way. And it's just super cool to see all the people who have, you know, worked with him or been a part of what he's done, and then boom, moved on and opened up great places of their own. So it's awesome. It's great to hear.
It's great. Yeah. And we had a great relationship, Bill and I, and it was kind of, that was like the last step to forging, you know, me as a chef that's going to go out on my own. He's so knowledgeable. He's just so artistic when it comes to food. And that like kind of fine edge is what I really wanted to learn from him. And Jessup Hall, the cuisine there was very much in line with what I intended to do. And I learned so much about flavors and it was a fun kitchen to run. We got along really well. And again, it was just, you're right, he is the Yoda. Dan Cardos is another Tavy alum.
Yeah.
He's doing all his cool stuff. So I feel really grateful that I was able to build relationships with those people.
Yeah, Cardos is like Obi-Wan or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what that makes me, but I'm scared to find out.
and listen, shout out to Chef Dan Cardos for winning Guys Grocery Games last night. That was awesome. He's coming on the podcast soon. We're very excited about that.
I'll have to learn all about that.
And you know, speaking of the Food Network and Guys Grocery Games, you've been on Guys Grocery Games, and you also competed on season 45 of Chopped, the High on the Hog episode. So definitely talk to me about those two things, and you know what they meant to you and how it was for you.
For sure, Guys Grocery Games was so fun. Again, at the point that it happened for me, I was still pretty timid. I don't know if it was like a lack of confidence. It was just like a lack of experience in certain ways. So I was terrified to be on television and just like, I was just like, oh my God, you know, I didn't know what the whole thing was going to look like. I thought I was going to make a fool of myself. And I was like, you know what? You know, you only live once. What do you have to lose? Storch actually put me up for it.
Of course.
And it was funny because it was right between my time from Madge to Jessup. And it was, in my opinion, a pivotal moment in my career, because there was a lot of that self-talk, like, come on, you got this. What are you worried about? You know, and going there, being up against these strangers that I never met before. It was just kind of like, I mean, I'm a pretty introverted person, so the social aspect was a little bit stressful alone, not to mention running through a freaking makeup grocery store, like just gathering ingredients. And my challenge was the hardest one I've seen. It's like a budget challenge. So I had like $12 to make, you know, a nice dish, and it was so challenging, but I won. And that was a huge confidence booster for me. And the funds that I won went into an account and eventually helped me get Tavern. So it came full circle. And like I said, it was just a huge confidence boost, because television and public speaking and all that stuff was kind of a sore spot for me for a long time. And that just changed me almost immediately. So that was really cool.
That's awesome.
And then the Chopped was the hardest thing I've ever done in my entire life. It was like, oh my God. And somebody said to me, harder than opening a restaurant. I was like, you know what? Yeah. I mean, it's two different things, but that day was just, holy shit. I don't know if I can swear, but it was exhausting. I got High on the Hog challenge, and after Storch won his episode, he got freaking sandwiches. So I just want to smack him for that, because my baskets were so difficult. My first one had pork blood ice cream and like some other, I can't even remember now, but it was the most outrageous things. And I was just like, all right, well, here goes nothing. I made it through. I got second place. I was in the dessert round, and I swear, just like everyone does, that I wasn't going to make ice cream, but I'm not a pastry chef, and the recipes I had memorized were so few and far between. I was like, I guess I have to do ice cream. And I went to go and grab the cream, and the other guy that was against me took all the cream. So I was like, okay. And I melted mozzarella and made mozzarella ice cream. And I made these little pound cakes, and I had this whole idea, because there was pork in the dessert basket too. So I was trying to go for like a sweet and savory situation. But in my frenzy, instead of choosing an aluminum pan for my muffins or my little cakes, I choose a silicone pan, and it didn't cook quick enough. And so I'm like picking apart little pieces of the crust, trying to plate it and pretend it was supposed to be deconstructed. Oh my God, I was horrified. That was like exactly what I was afraid of happening. I was like, I wanted to win so bad, but I had so many people tell me after that I should have won. The flavors were great, but the other guy, you know, he had this recipe memorized. He probably made that cake, you know, 50 times or more. And me, I rarely make pastry. So I did my best. That's all I can say. And it was a really, really fun experience. So
that's awesome. That's great. And, you know, I just feel like so many, you know, I remember when Storch was talking about when he was on Chopped, and I also had on Kaylin Sauvin from Notch 8 and Note. who was on Chopped, and it's so fun to like hear the different stories and how it went for everyone. Kaylin was very much like you. She opened the basket and she was like, "Oh my God, what the fuck?"
Yeah, I could not believe. I was like, "Pork blood ice cream," and I knew it. They sit you in this like stewing room, and I'm looking at all these other people. One guy has a huge pig tattoo on his arm. Another guy's talking about how he worked at a kosher butcher shop or something like that. And I was like, okay, I see where this is going. And they don't tell you the theme of the episode until you're standing there. So they're like, high on the hog challenge. And I'm just like, okay. And I thought I had it in the bag, but the ingredients were so offbeat that like the pork blood ice cream, you know, I nailed the pork chop dish, but all the other stuff was so odd. It was just like, it was really challenging.
And didn't the Chopped episode come out sort of like just before Tavern on Stay opened or just after or something? Around that same time?
I think Guys did. I don't remember Guys. When they okay, aired. Okay. And then Chopped aired last year. So this is another little interesting anecdote. So I applied for Chopped, or somebody sought me out for Chopped, and the day they wanted to come out and interview me at my restaurant was literally the day after I signed the lease here. So I had none of my stuff here. It was a shithole, honestly. You know, I had so much work to do. We didn't do anything. I had a crew here the night before. We were just cleaning to make sure it was like camera ready. But if you watch the episode, they go so fast that nobody could tell but me, but there's nothing on the freaking shelves. And then I was horrified by that. And then the worst part was I was in a stupor because I was so exhausted. I was still working full time at Jessup, trying to get this done, sign the lease, but I wanted to keep working for at least a few weeks to make sure my ass was covered. So again, I was half asleep most of the time. I get here for the interview and I have a hoodie on. The lady tells me I can't wear it, and she has a t-shirt in the van. I'm like, okay, I don't know what that means, but she comes back with this XXXL green pocket tee. I'm just like, that's when I just submitted to like whatever the universe has in store. I'm like, I can't do anything else right now. I'll just wear your triple XL Walmart t-shirt in my empty, dirty, dusty restaurant. And then at that point, they were like, okay, introduce yourself. You know, I'm Emily Mingrone and I'm chef owner of Tavern on State. And like I said, I had just signed the lease. Like, I didn't feel like the chef owner yet. I didn't do anything. You know, we had all these big ideas, but I didn't know it was going to happen. So like, I'm the chef owner of Tavern on State. Here we go. And then, so that was my pre-show interview, and it aired a year later where we were much more comfortable, but yeah, that was intense.
Nice. Excellent. And you know what? I hope you go back on Food Network sometime, you know, again, because honestly, last night watching Dan, and just the other times when I've watched Kaylin or I've watched Chef Storch, I got to say, I love it. I sit on my couch. I'm like fist pumping. I'm cheering.
It's so fun. Yeah. It's
awesome. I love it. So the more I can root on, you know, the rock star chefs that we have in the state, the better. So if you know, definitely get back on it.
Hey, dude, I hope so.
I'm so amped from last night. I just
I love it.
But anyway, so when people come to Tavern on State on State Street in wonderful New Haven, what can they expect on the menu from the great and powerful Chef Mingrone?
It changes all the time. I mean, I really keep it seasonally inspired. So depending on what month you come, you could have a variety of different things. You know, we're just coming out of the summer menu now. I still have it on the scallop crudo with strawberry. We have it with strawberry vinaigrette, sliced strawberries, macadamia nuts, and anise hyssop. So that's been one of the crowd favorites. Our steak, we always have a rotating steak dish. I'm just working into a fall one now, but it's still the summer set, which is grilled flank steak with sun gold tomatoes, roasted fingerlings, and corn hollandaise. So that's pretty cool. I did recently, this was peak summer, like in July or August, but I did a corn on the cob with hemp butter, which is the first time I had ever worked with hemp. But Patty Pop from Sport Hill, she's growing CBD.
Patty's
so,
the best. Patty's
yeah,
the
she's, best. She's awesome too. But I was like, can I get leaves? Because it's just something that I like to be innovative, and I haven't seen it anywhere. And I know it's edible, and I was just screwing around with it. So I juiced it, and then I ended up making hemp butter, which was for the corn. So now we're getting into the early fall stuff. I just changed our burrata. Used to be with peaches. Now it's with, it was stracciatella peaches, this really great saucisson from Olympia Provisions out in Oregon. We have some of their products over at Provisions, my Provisions, but they make excellent charcuterie. So it was peaches, stracciatella, the saucisson de Alsace, and cracked coriander and scallion, I think. But that changed, so get it out of your head. Now it's broccoli and burrata. I got broccoli di ciccio, which is like an heirloom variety of broccoli, really sweet and tender with burrata, preserved lemon, and then broccoli pesto. So one really important thing that's important to me about my cooking style is like I really try and use like all parts of the vegetable the same way I would with like an animal or something. Or I like to manipulate an ingredient in multiple ways on the same dish. So that's a prime example, you know, broccoli pesto. And with the corn too, I was trying to figure out a way to use the husks. I was burning them. I tried to blend them and they're just so fibrous, but it was funny because a friend of mine, Renee, from Oyster Club, she posted something about a new pasta dish she made and she charred and pulverized the corn husks and then worked it into a pasta dough. So I thought that was a really cool way to utilize it. My head exploded a little.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
Yeah.
That sounds really awesome. And, you know, one thing I've noticed about you is that you pair things that you wouldn't think would work, but work so well that it's also mind-blowing. So that was something that I thought was really cool. I mean, we talked briefly about that before we started, you know, the oysters with the beet. I mean, that's yeah. And then you know, strawberries and scallops, like, oh,
exactly.
My
gosh. Yeah. Well, thank you for saying that too, because that's something I take great pride in. Like I really try not to manipulate things too much. I just pair them so that they work together and take care of the ingredients. Like the scallop dish was fun because so this was something I learned from Chef Bill was, you know, I love using the scraps, but I never thought to make like a vinegar out of scraps. So that was something we did at Jessup that I took with me here. So like all the tops of the strawberries and all the scraps, we just soaked in vinegar and made a strawberry vinegar, which I then used to rehydrate. This is kind of crazy, but I use it to rehydrate dried strawberries. And then I blended that and that's what made the vinaigrette. So it was like so meta.
Whoa, that's crazy. Wow, that sounds crazy.
Yeah, so it's really sweet, but also tart, which is why it goes so nicely with the scallops because they're so creamy and sweet themselves that the acid cuts it nicely.
I'm trying to picture that in my head and oh my gosh.
it's a really unexpected, delicious pairing. And then you kind of get the anise notes from the hyssop. And the macadamia nuts are just so fatty and unctuous and toasty. That's one of my favorite dishes we've done in the recent past.
I got to get up ASAP.
Yes.
Get up ASAP. I have that. Oh my gosh. You hear that, Jeff Davey? We got to get over there.
It's only going to be on. I only got another week or so for the strawberries. Oh. So got to make it snappy. But there'll be something equally good in its place.
Okay, awesome. Well, that I know. I mean, that is obvious. I can only, you know, I can only imagine the menus to come at Tavern on State, and I'm excited for it. And, you know, with everything you do, I know it can be super stressful. Either it could be long days. You know, I know recently you got some time off and I'm so glad. I always love to see when my chef friends get some time off because I know how hard they work and, you know, every day, countless hours, just, you know, constantly grinding and it's awesome and it's so respectable. But in your free time, when you do get some very, very minimal free time, I'm sure, what do you like to do? What are some things that you know, to unwind and just to let off some steam?
Smoke weed. kidding, but also not kidding. I love going out to eat. You know, hospitality as a whole thing is my thing. So I like to serve and make people happy here. But on the other hand, when I'm not working, I like to go to the best restaurants around and eat and drink and see what they're doing. And, you know, I have a lot of chef friends, so catch up with them. I have a cute little dog. We like going to the park, going to the beach. And on the other, like, creative arts side, you know, aside from culinary arts, I enjoy drawing, painting, stuff like that. Just kind of losing myself, taking myself out of my thoughts. Because if I'm just sitting around, I'm most often thinking about work or food. So I got to kind of distract my brain from time to time with something like that.
Yeah, you know, following you on Instagram, I've seen some of those things that you've done in your free time. That's awesome. I love it. I've followed along. I'm like, that's great. I'm like, it's always good to have such a great outlet. And, you know, and being a chef is an art. So, I mean, I know you got to be super artistic.
Totally. It's exhausting. Like I said, it's a blessing and a curse. I love it, but it really is consuming.
And weed's legal now. So, I
mean, yeah, exactly.
I mean, cheers. Let's go.
Perfect. I got my medicinal card couple of years ago, so I've been cruising.
Yeah, and you know, Connecticut, you know, we're legal now. So, and you know, with your job and everything you do, I always like to ask a two-part question to you know, anyone who owns a business, especially a chef and someone who, you know, puts so much into what they do every day to make others happy. You know, what is the hardest part and the best part about what you do as a chef, a business owner, you know, everything like that?
Let's see. The best part about it for me is just, number one, being able to do what I love. Number two, it's always different. And sometimes that's the worst part about it too. You know, it's always something. But it's a good thing because it keeps me on my toes. You know, I love the people I work with. I've curated a really great team here. And it's great because our philosophy is such that we attract people, like-minded people. And I can finally say, like, literally as of this moment, we have a solid, like, I'm not in the kitchen for the first time in probably 6 months sitting here talking to you, because my staff has really, really shown their stuff. So the relationships in that way, the creative outlet, making my guests happy by just serving them unexpectedly delicious food in a comfortable setting. I want people to feel like they're in my home. I love entertaining. So it's like, okay, you're here and this is my house and like, let's take care of you. The hardest part, you know, outside of COVID right now is a lot similar to the good parts is it's always changing. You know, we've been kind of getting sucker punched a lot with COVID and our basement flooded last week with Ida. And it's just like, oh my God, you know,
your basement flooded?
Yeah. We didn't lose much, but it was a lot of paper goods, which can add up. And we were off last week. So it's like, can we catch a break? So we had to come in. But on a positive note, again, back to the good stuff is having that freedom of it being mine and being able to make those decisions. Like, let's close for a week if we can afford it. I want everyone to take a freaking break because the summer was crazy and the winter is going to be crazy. So let's chill for a sec. I mean, it's a hard job. I don't know if I can necessarily pick my least favorite thing about it because I really do love all of it, even the shitty stuff. But it can be exhausting and consuming. And my girlfriend, you know, she feels it sometimes. It's hard for me to be present when a lot of stuff is going on at work. So you do sacrifice a bit of your personal life for that. But luckily, she's super understanding and supportive. But it's challenging to find that middle ground.
Yeah, no, I, you know, like I said, I couldn't, you know, I obviously don't know, but I couldn't imagine. But we're so thankful for you guys because, you know, one thing that I say all the time, you know, on this show, and I said it especially during when we were in like the throes of the pandemic, is that you got to support restaurant, you know, the restaurants, restaurant owners, the chef, you know, everyone there. Because the one thing about restaurants is like they work so hard and put so much heart and soul into it so that you can come out with your family and like celebrate an event or have a special moment. And you don't really get that special moment if restaurants aren't open and they aren't putting that effort in for you. So that was the one thing I was always saying to people, like they make it all happen. Like they make your special moments more special. So you know, support them, care for them. You know, I hate seeing all these things where people are writing negative, you know, reviews of restaurants during a pandemic. I mean, oh, that just sickens me, like me. Like, I almost want to just curl up into a ball and just like disappear because I'm so disappointed in people. So I can't imagine what you guys go through. So I tip hard, 25, you know, 25 plus 30, you know, 30%, especially since the pandemic. And, you know, I love chefs, restaurateurs, the wage, you know, but everyone that's involved, like some people just don't have any idea like what goes into it. So I appreciate you guys and I can't imagine. So I'm glad that you're I'm glad everything's good with you. That, you know,
I could not agree with you more. And, you know, guests like you that get it and appreciate what we're doing, we have such good relationships with 95% of our customers because they have that same perspective. And we're a local neighborhood spot. But we have had those few assholes that come in and give my staff a hard time or write a negative Yelp review. But it's like, I'm not shy anymore because I don't want to be held hostage or like victim. I don't want to be the victim of this kind of crap anymore. So I haven't been afraid to kind of put my foot down with people on Yelp, not like berating them or anything, but just like being real. Like, look, I'm sorry your dessert took 5 extra minutes. We have been running a 2-man line when we normally have 4 people. We're doing our best, you know, and I just, even in person too, like my manager had to ask somebody to leave a couple weeks ago because he was like berating our staff, and it's just not fair. Like, I don't know. I could talk about it forever, but getting the agita already. So we'll just cut it short.
I mean, be a good human. That's all, that's all I got to say. And that's the slogan of my good friend, Rob, who has the foundation Comfort Cases. That's their slogan. Be a good human. Live that. I live by that every day. And I just wish everyone else would, you know, and just be respectful to these people.
And how do you how do you live with yourself? Like, what's the rest of your life like? You know, I don't understand the motivation sometimes. And even if you've never been in a restaurant or worked in a restaurant, it's still that basic human understanding and compassion. Like, I'm not out to get you. Like, we're literally all doing the best we can. So I don't know.
So a couple more things before we wrap up. And thank you so much again for doing this. I really, really appreciate it. And, you know, one of those things is a quick shout out. One of my good friends, one of my recent good friends, we play in the same softball team together in my hometown of Newtown, Connecticut this year. His name's Danny Cobbs. And I told him that you were coming on. And he's like, oh, I love going to Tavern on State. He's like, I love Tavern on State. He's like, I'm so glad you're having them on. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, me too. And he lives in New Haven and he loves New Haven. And I love New Haven. Sometimes I, you know, my girlfriend and I will come to New Haven for the weekend and, you know, we'll go to Toads and see a concert. You know, we saw Action Bronson one time a couple years ago over there at Toads, and it was a great night and walked around and went to the different restaurants. So many great restaurants. Yeah. But you living there, what can you say about New Haven? Because it comes up so much on the podcast about just how great New Haven is. A place to come for food and nightlife and just hang out and everything. So, you know, you're there, you know, you open a restaurant there. So what could you say about it?
I love New Haven. It's close to my heart. Like I said, I grew up the next town over. So we were always hanging out around here and kind of similar to my career path. I was like, I got to get out of New Haven. I got to do something different, blah, blah, blah. You know, I lived in Fairfield County for a while when I was working down there. And then I don't know, I was looking at restaurant spaces all over and it just brought me back to here. And once I came here to see the space initially, I was reminded of why I love it so much because we would do the same thing. Even when I was not living here, I would come back up to eat and just hang out. It has such a nice energy, a lot of artistic people. And a lot of people think it's Yale centric, which is true most of the time. But I don't feel like we deal with that much here at Tavern. We do get the Yale kids, but a lot of other businesses rely solely on that. But we're more of a community oriented place. But like you said, the music that's available, Cafe 9 is one of my favorite spots just to catch a quick show. It's just like a hole in the wall, but it's just,
there's so much. I played at Cafe 9 way back in the day. Yeah.
I mean, I was
in bands way back and I played at Cafe 9. I also played at The Space.
One of my cooks used to work there.
Yeah. So
great. And it's a nice little music city. Like they just opened Westville Bowl by me. I live over on that side of town and I could literally hear the shows from my living room, which is really cool.
Nice. College Street Music Hall.
Yeah, the College Street Music Hall opened Westville Music Bowl. So it's in the old Yale Bowl and they have
very cool
shows now. Yeah.
Very cool.
And New Haven gets pigeonholed for pizza, among other things, but it's a lot more than that. I think there's sort of a revival coming, especially with restaurants. A lot of people are realizing the potential that's here because most places besides us and, you know, maybe one or two others have been around for 15, 20 plus years, which says something, you know, they were able to survive this long. But there's not much new blood aside from, like I said, us and like 3 other people. So I think it has potential to really explode. And I hope to be more of a part of it as we move on.
Nice. You know, I'm guilty of liking two locations in New Haven that have other locations in the state. You know, I'm usually like a type of guy who likes to just go to a place that, you know, isn't necessarily a chain, even though I wouldn't really consider these places chains. One of the ones I know very well, because it's one of my girlfriend's favorites, Barcelona. We like.
Oh, you know, I love Barcelona too.
Okay, good. And
I know it's a chain too, but I always have a great meal there.
Yeah. And the other one we went, we've gone a couple times. One time on New Year's Eve, which was really great, is the restaurant that Mario Batali used to be associated with.
Terry Lodge?
Yeah. So Terry Lodge. Really like Terry Lodge too.
Ashamed to say I've yet to go there.
Okay. Yeah. We enjoyed it. You know, definitely thought it was really good. I know they have multiple, you know, both spots have multiple locations, so you never know, but I know that they put great chefs at those locations, so I'm not really too concerned about
Barcelona. Barcelona was our date night spot for a long time, and they shut down for COVID and they still haven't reopened, so we're like hurting because my days off are Sunday and Monday. I can't find anything really to go to, so we'll drive.
Yeah, I saw that they're still not open. I was like, no.
Yeah. I heard through the grapevine they were turning it into Bar Taco, but now it seems like that's not. I saw that too.
And I was like, no way. Because I love Bar Taco.
Yeah, I know. I love both. I'm like, can't you just do like a hybrid model?
But that's more of a reason for people to go to Tavern on State because.
Exactly. That's what I've been trying to say.
That's awesome. Well, listen, one more question. And thank you so much, Emily, for coming on. I really appreciate it. Everyone said you were the best. You definitely are. This is great. I could talk to you all night. This is awesome. You're a great time. And one of those questions is a question that I ask. I've been asking, you know, my guests since we started this podcast a year ago. And since you live in New Haven, this is a great question for you, because the question was, when you're in New Haven, if you're willing to answer this, because of how, you know, New Haven's the mecca of pizza in the country, what do you think is your favorite, or what do you think, you know, what's your favorite, or what do you think personally is the best abits, as they say, as we say, in New Haven? And on that same note, what are some restaurants just in general? You know, obviously we talked, you know, Barcelona, Bar Taco, but what are some other places that you definitely like to go to, you know, in your free time? And take it away.
I knew the pizza question had to come up at some point. You know, and I change my opinion every like few years. So
it's hard.
Right now, my favorite is Sally's. I can't believe it, because I always thought I was going to be a modern person forever. Like, I love modern pizza. But then once I tried Sally's, I don't know. I don't know if they're under new management, so maybe that's something to do with it. But even their simple tomato pie with just no cheese and tomato and crust, I never thought I would order that, let alone enjoy it.
Yeah.
And it was awesome. Their sauce is so good. So Sally's is my favorite right now. Pepe's is in the running, but I have to be in the mood for it. All three of them. They are totally different things. But if I had to choose just one, I would say Sally's.
Awesome. And you know, Sally's opened a second location. I couldn't believe it. They opened another location in like Stamford or something.
For real? I didn't know that.
Or I think, yeah. Is it Stamford? I think it's Stamford. They opened a second location. I was like, what? Or Norwalk, or maybe in the Sono collection. I forget where it is. But
oh, yeah. I think you're right.
They opened a second location. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, Sally's. But the new ownership, I think they're just like, hey, we got to be like Frank's. Frank, exactly. We got to go all over the place.
Exactly. Well, they're doing a good job. I mean, even during peak COVID, I saw they had this whole parking lot like set up. They had a really elaborate to-go system. Wow. So it was admirable. And as far as other restaurants go, we mentioned Zinc. They're always great.
Always old good.
Time, long time standing. Barcelona again. Bar August, which is right around the corner from us here. It's not a restaurant per se, but it's a little wine bar with small plates. They're great. Really high quality stuff and a great wine selection. Where bar else?
August. Okay, cool.
Shell and Bones is always a classic. We go there often. It's right on the water.
I've seen people go there. Yeah. I've seen people rave about that. Okay. Shell and Bones.
Really good. And they have a nice patio.
Yeah.
Other than that, I mean, if I go out, I tend to kind of venture out of New Haven first. You know, I hit all the favorites, Oyster Club. I try and get down to Westport when I can to see Bill and company. Mm. I haven't been out to Jeff in a while, but he was in here recently, so I got to pay him a visit. But I like that because we all build relationships with each other. You know, it's like we all have very different styles of cuisine, but we all like to eat as well. So it's like, I know I'm going to be taken care of if I go to any of those spots, because there's nothing worse than if you go somewhere, spend a good amount of money, and you're not satisfied with your meal. Like, that's literally the worst thing. So I'm choosy with where I spend my time, but there's a lot of people around here doing really cool stuff. So
that's awesome. You know, I'm on a personal mission to eat at every food truck at Long Wharf one day.
Yes. Oh my God. They're so good.
So good. There's just so many. It's like,
I still don't even know which one I like best because I can never remember the names. I'm just like, okay, it's the black truck with the green writing or whatever else, you know?
That's how I do it. That's so funny. Oh my gosh. That's so great. Well, listen, Chef Emily Magrone, Tavern on State, Provisions on State, doing amazing things. She's a total boss, a total G, literally one of the best, if not the best chef in the state. Get over there, check it out, say hello to her, support them. They're doing great things. They're great people, and that's all you can ask for. And listen, thank you so much for coming on the show. Like I said, you were highly sought after. So many people wanted you to come on. This has been a blast. I could talk to you all day, but have a great night. And listen, let's do this again sometime down the road, and I will definitely see you soon.
All right, I'm
coming up either with Jeff or whatever. I'm coming up. So thank
you.
We're
not too far from the train station if you feel like having a couple either.
Hey, that's a great idea. But listen, thank you so much and have a great night. Thank you.
Good, man. Thank you.
Huge thanks once again to my guest on the podcast today, Chef Emily Magrone of Tavern on State in New Haven, Connecticut. So happy for all your success. It is so cool to get to learn about your background in the culinary world and all the wonderful things that led up to what you are doing today. Can't wait to come by Tavern on State and say hello, and I wish you and Shane continued success. Yet again, another episode of Sweeten Up is in the books. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe anywhere you get your podcasts. We would greatly appreciate your feedback. As a reminder, you can play the podcast with the help of your smart speaker by simply saying, "Play the podcast Sweeten Up with Jeff Spencer." Thank you as always to my best friends, the guys who make it all possible. Post-production and music, Morgan Lutzi. Production and art director, Kurt Vinci. Editor and writer, Nick Passacreta. And big thanks, as always, to Devin Cipelli. My guest on the podcast next week is the oh-so-wonderful Lisa Nichols. Lisa Nichols is the founder and owner of Bread and Beast Food Photography. She has covered food photography for the biggest chefs in the state, as well as Hearst Media, Connecticut Magazine, and other publications. Lisa also took the photos for Sweeten Up Podcast, and I am so excited to share my conversation with this special and gifted individual. But until then, you know the deal. Stay safe, stay healthy, love you all, peace.